This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart here with Dave Bourne, and this is the place where you get, in the middle of your day, local talk about ideas and institutions and individuals and initiatives here in Marion and Polk County, all throughout the Mid-Valley. We love focusing on Salem and Kaiser, and the top of the news, of course, today is a new city councilor for the city of Salem has been selected, and we're going to get to that a little bit later in the hour. And
oh, sure, tease me with that.
Yeah, we're going to get to, well, as if there was...
I don't know who it is.
Any...
I actually was unplugged from that
morning. Yes, very healthy. Vanessa Nordyke was, of course, preordained, I thought, once Bonnie Heich dropped out. And so Vanessa Nordyke was interviewed last night along with Reed Sund, who is an applicant for the seat, and they selected Vanessa Nordyke.
Okay.
Thank you. So 8 votes total. 4 of them went to Vanessa. 1 of them went to Bonnie, even though she had dropped out, and 3 to Reed Sund.
How could they vote for somebody that dropped out?
Because they well, I've done it.
Wait,
I voted for president after the person has dropped out of the presidential race because I didn't
different.
Like my choices left.
That's
right?
Different.
Not really.
The vote was last night. The person was announced the day before they dropped out. Hello, it was live voting. Hello, they're there.
Well, they. I guess,
how does that happen?
Believed that she was the best candidate.
Even though she dropped out.
Mm-hmm. So here's the.
Makes me go, what?
The thing that doesn't give us warm and fuzzy in the community is it was so split. I mean, a person sitting in the seat that only had the support of half the counselors.
Yeah.
Half. So that's going to be an interesting race. It might be the marquee race as we go into February, March, April, May, as that city council seat gets contested because, of course, Reed Sund has already filed to run. He's already running for that seat. The election will be in May. But now that Vanessa Nordyke has been appointed, she's saying, well, I'm going to run too. So what we said should not happen...
Happen.
They put a person in the seat who will be running for the seat, in effect, makes her an instant incumbent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me again why the council is electing or appointing somebody?
There was a resignation. So Sally Cook, she
so
lost her
So why is
husband.
It up to the council?
That's the way the charter is written.
Who wrote that charter? Oh, the council.
No, it's, yeah, it's in the... It is
the people should have voted for somebody.
They will in May.
A special election.
In May. There's no point. Come on. We're not going to pay for a special election for that.
And it should have remained open.
The city charter is, in effect, the Constitution. It is for what the state constitution is, what the city is. The city's charter says how to handle these things based on timeline in between terms and things like that. And with election only... 5, 6, 7 months away.
Sorry, but the council shouldn't be in charge of that.
There's always a vacancy, and on the state level, a lot of times vacancies are filled by appointments by the governor. And
okay,
you know, right? And the Republicans filled vacancies for a state representative, Raquel Moore Green, who we're going to have on the show here before too long, of course, and Senator Denise Bowles. She was appointed. So it's just the way the system works. It's not flawed. What's troublesome, though,
is
it didn't have even 2/3. It didn't have unanimous. It said half the people said this is the right person, and half the person said it's not, to the point where one person voted for somebody who wasn't even the running.
Exactly.
Right?
Are there going to be protests?
I don't think there's going to be protests.
Because I'm thinking there might be.
But it's going to. Are you going to be out there with your...
No, because I'm not a snowflake, so...
Okay. but it's going to be an interesting city council race.
Yes.
There'll be a lot of people needed to march door-to-door for their chosen candidate.
And I'll leave it up to you.
And we'll be covering
that. To point out all the best ones.
On Newsmakers.
We should do that. We should go by, you know, each person that's up for running and go through them and say who the best one is.
Well, subject to broadcasting laws, we'll interview all of them, right? Have to can't run afoul of equal time laws or what have
we'll
you.
We'll have them all on
as much as we can.
I'll invite every single one of them. If they don't come on, that's their own fault.
One thing I thought was interesting, because I read the article both in the Statesman Journal and Salem Reporter, and lo and behold, the Salem Reporter had more detail.
Amazing.
Folks, if you have not subscribed to the Salem Reporter, yes, it is a news feed partner of KYKN, but I don't get
there's
anything
a reason.
Out of the deal.
There's the reason they are.
Wow, just better work.
Yeah.
Better work. Some of those details I'm talking about.
Real reporting.
Only saw in Salem Reporter.
Balanced.
Speaking of Salem Reporter, on a completely different topic.
Yes.
I thought this was interesting. They cover education pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
We like to talk education here, but it's been a few weeks since we really focused on it with any topic. But there was an article recently about funding for teachers' supplies in the classroom.
I remember that.
And it was a Salem Reporter expose, or whatever you want to call it. And it had to do with the donorschoose.org. So,
what is that?
In the olden days, teachers are always going out of pocket, and always has gone out of pocket. And if little Johnny doesn't have a pencil, lo and behold, a teacher finds a way to find a pencil, right?
Yeah.
And it's gotten worse and worse, because now there's identified social needs, and maybe little Johnny doesn't have a change of clothes. And
you know how they fix that? Over the years?
Tell me.
Because my stepdaughter is a teacher. They have been told to take all the supplies that the kids bring in, put them all into, separate them into buckets, and everybody goes and gets one.
Oh.
So you're basically sharing your supplies that you bring in.
Very interesting. So it started with talking about a teacher from Myers Elementary School, Monica Prillick.
Mm-hmm.
She started, 12 years ago. And she got a desk, tables and chairs in the students, and a filing cabinet. That's all that was in the classroom. That's it. She didn't have bookshelves. She didn't have school supplies. Her coworkers were told her to hit the yard sales and thrift stores, quote unquote.
Really?
So interesting article. And how many more things they anticipate that teachers are going to have to fabricate out of, you know, thin air and out of their own pocketbooks.
Out of all the money that we pay.
So she goes to, yes, exactly.
Out of all the money that we pay.
Jumping right into my point.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm reading your mind again.
Scary. Dave Bourne and Brent DeHart, practically the same person. Here we go.
Almost.
DonorsChoose.org. I think it's a great idea. It's a crowdfunding solution. You know, people can go on DonorsChoose.org. You can pick a school. You can pick a need and say, and it could be anything from colored pencils to, you know, Chromebooks. I mean, all sorts of things, science-related things. But, you know, the article goes on to say that she didn't even have classroom books that were beyond the textbooks.
What?
So there was nothing there. There was nothing there in addition to just the textbooks for people to explore.
Was the last teacher disgruntled and cleaned it out? Because most classrooms have all that stuff. Usually.
And were they provided by the district or provided by the teacher?
Somebody cleaned out that classroom is what they did.
Or it's an expansion, but anyway, just in the last 5 years in Salem-Keizer,
yeah,
through this tool, DonorsChoose.org, they raised over $400,000. And not in a pile, in little individual projects, 700 different projects.
Huh.
Little bits of a time, bits of a time. Somebody, we need these books for science. We need this, da da da.
That's a good way to do it.
And people fund them.
Yep.
Very cool. You can, you know, somebody can contribute to a classroom for an elementary school in their neighborhood. If they think that science is really important, maybe they can donate some science supplies. If they think reading's really important, maybe they can donate some additional book
resources. I have a few science supplies, science projects around the house I can donate.
So here's a couple of examples. Haysville Elementary, a fifth grade teacher, got watercolor trays and paper making supplies so that she can add art to her class.
That's good.
Our taxpayers was not putting in art supplies in her fifth grade classroom, apparently.
No. Hmm.
McKay High School teacher used the site to get copies of a novel. Aristotle and Dante discovered the secrets of the universe in Spanish to motivate kids to read. Nice. So this whole thing, again, it's donorschoose.org. It started, year 2000,
mm-hmm,
in New York City by a history teacher. And we can just browse. You know, you can look at your hometown, anything you want to fund. But if you like education and you want to fund, throw a few dollars, it's a great way to do it for Salem-Keizer and support the teachers.
That's above and beyond all the taxes that you pay to the school district.
Yep.
Just saying.
Yeah. Yep.
Where does all that money go?
That's a completely different hour.
It just baffles me how much money is for funding schools, and yet they'd never have enough.
It's true. It is true. And, you know, I'm pro-education, and I'm really pro-teacher, although I'm not always very supportive of the stances that teachers' unions take.
No.
And I'm downright critical that teachers' unions pretend that what they stand for was the kids. No, you are a labor union.
Right.
So yeah. It's a big distinction. We can't just kind of blend them and give them a pass and say it's all for the children. No, that you're saying it's all for these employees of our organized labor group.
Right.
So those are two different things. But I'm pro-teacher, and nice thing, Dave, is if you use a tool like this, it's going into that classroom for the purpose that you have chosen
to
fund.
That I agree with.
And it doesn't go through the huge funnel of the millions, hundreds of millions.
The black hole of funding in this state.
It filters down and how much it drips into the classroom.
Yeah, right.
And where does it all go? We got to take a break, but where does it all go? This lends itself back to the question I keep posing is, are schools social service agencies now? And if so, we have to stop calling it an education budget or start funding it out of social service money.
I support the teachers as long as they're not taking the kids out of class to go and, you know, protest green stuff or, you know, climate change. Ugh.
All right. We've got one more school-related story.
Brain cells just blew up.
It's a little surprise to me, actually. And this one's a private school. So let's get to that after the break. I'm Brent DeHart talking with Dave Bourne. Dave Bourne's barely tolerating me today here on Newsmakers 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Brent's in deep thought at the moment. I was just talking to him, and you should have seen him. Glazed over eyeballs. He didn't hear a word I said. Hey, new segment of Newsmakers this hour is brought to you by Color Tile Salem. Yes, I was talking to you. And
what was your name again?
Yeah.
All right. Totally. That's because certain things, you know, how it happens, certain things just perplex you. And it's kind of like when your computer has that blue spinny circle.
Oh.
Right? I think that was probably the look on my face. It was
the
like
blue screen of
spinny
death.
Circle going on, thinking, contemplating.
Yeah.
As I'm perusing the Salem Reporter, and the big question for these counselors, the counselor that was selected now for sitting in Ward 7C to replace Sally Cook.
We're going back to that again?
Question we have to.
Okay.
And then we'll go back to the education. Counselor Jim Lewis asked the obvious question. Whether they thought Salem needed a third bridge across the Willamette River.
Thank you.
Right? Reed Sun contended that current levels of traffic congestion and projections for population growth called for a new bridge.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
And then Vanessa Nordyke says, well, this is a quote in the Salem Reporter. I will say I plan on saying this throughout the campaign that, yes, I believe that Salem needs another river crossing.
But just not a bridge?
Oh, this. I'm sorry.
I
apologize.
Quote.
This is Mr. Reed's son. It needs. I do believe that Salem needs another river crossing. I think that ultimately our town's growing and projected to grow quite a lot, and we continue to think about how that impacts the city. So Nordyke, on the other hand, said that the bridge should be considered, but the cost shouldn't fall only on Salem residents. Many residents don't use the bridge as much as tourists or companies delivering goods. Okay, because tourists aren't important to people live here. You know, tourists are not as important as people living here. And companies delivering goods, that's not important to us either. The person that brings your Amazon order, that person's not important. And getting goods and services around the city is not important. Nordyke said, I absolutely think we should look at additional river crossing capacity in the years to come, but I think we can do a better job moving forward in determining where and how and when and how much.
Oh.
So, again, we put a person, and by we, I mean the city councilors who opposed the river crossing, put another person in there that doesn't understand, who does not have the mental capacity or chooses to remain purposefully ignorant of a vital and immediate need for transportation infrastructure. Well, I don't know. We should probably take a look at where it should go. Well, thank you. We did that for 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
We did that in partnership with the county and the county.
And the state.
And the state. And the federal. And Salem, Kaiser. We did that for 12 years.
Salem is not the only one paying for it.
Ready, done. Oh, we should probably look at it in years to come. You know when they started saying that? 1970.
Right.
I'm like, we should probably look at it in years to come. Councillor Nordyke, oh my gosh.
Wow.
Oh, it's terrifying. And good luck with your campaign. If you can't figure out that people want to be able to drive through their city without wasting time and burning gas in gridlock traffic that exists right now. And if it's a 20-year process to get a bridge, we're 20 years late. Well, we should probably look at that in years to come.
We're already 40 years behind.
We can do a better job. Well, you can. You can do a better job than ODOT, U.S. Transportation, right?
Mm-hmm.
City of Salem, City of Kaiser, all the citizens that are involved in the process, right? The regional transportation people, the Polk County, and Marion County. But you, Councillor Nordyke, who has exactly 2 hours of experience, you could do a better job evaluating where the bridge should go.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
don't hit the door hit you.
I have to say this today because the mayor will be on tomorrow on Wednesdays with Denise, and I'm sure he'll talk about it a little bit, but not in exactly the same manner I will.
No.
All right, folks.
Or the manner I do.
We're laying it down, Ward 7. If you're not registered to vote, go register to vote.
Yeah.
If you've never written a check to a candidate, get prepared to write one for Reed's son, right? Anyway, I absolutely think we should look at additional river crossing capacity in the years to come.
That's unbelievable.
It is. It's just jaw-dropping.
Because people in agencies, in the city, in the counties, in the state, in the federal, wasted pretty much 12 years of their lives working to put a bridge in for us.
Mm-hmm.
And they're 40 years behind. We should have three more bridges in Salem already.
So, and here's the other thing that kind of hints at her ignorance of the whole issue. It's just like, well, I don't think Salem should have to bear the whole cost.
They're not.
They weren't going to.
No, not at all.
The cost, what the cost was and where the source of the funds were going to come from was not determined when the city council killed this thing in February. Neither one was being decided. We hadn't decided what design of the bridge. We didn't know what the cost was going to be, and we didn't know how much federal, state, county, regional, and local dollars it was going to take to get it done. So for her to say, well, I don't know, I don't think the Salemites need to bear the whole cost. Oh my gosh.
Who told you
that they would?
Yeah.
Everybody knew. I mean, everybody from the most staunch bridge supporter, right? From the bridge advocates that formed their own organizations, nobody felt that Salem could do it on its own.
No way.
This is not news. This is not, of course you can't do it on your own. Right?
Ugh.
I was like, oh, well, we shouldn't have to do it on our own. Well,
you're not.
And you know what? Those of us who enjoy living in a city, right? We like goods and services to move through the city.
And we like to be able to get out of the city.
That's part of. Anyway.
You know, all right. Maybe go to the coast.
Salem Reporter, folks.
How about for you going home?
If you want to.
Right, Brad?
Yeah.
You got to go home that way, right?
Yep.
I try and go through the town.
If you want to see the difference between your subscription of the Statesman Journal and the Salem Reporter, just look at the reporting today about the appointment.
Yeah.
All right. Moving back on to education. As promised in the first segment, we were talking about opportunities that people have to fund projects and supplies in classrooms so the teachers don't have to take it out of their pay, which I'm married to a teacher.
Right.
You know, I've been living this for almost 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And some things are reimbursed and some things are not. And but, you know, help the teacher out and help the kids out. I've always wanted to have an opportunity. Like, well, what do you need right here in the classroom? Because that's all the questions we have. We have these questions like you have, Dave Bourne. All the taxes that we pay, all this education money, how much is going to the classroom? How much does it really cost to fund one classroom? Teacher, supplies, books, curriculum, da-da-da.
Right.
And then teachers are going out of pocket and the kids are going without something that might be incredible.
When you and I were going to school, it was a big thing. We went to school with, because we got a list of supplies. Remember that? Mm-hmm. The parents got a list of supplies, and the parents went to the store with you, and you got everything you needed for your classes.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you went to school, and you had everything. And mom always told me, this is what you get for the year. Don't lose them. That's what we were told. We were told that, and you get responsibility for your stuff. Now, why and how did this happen that the kids are not getting the supplies before they start school?
Well, because a lot of them can't afford them. So some people are irresponsible. We'll give you that. But some of them, because, some of these schools, 75% of them. Oh, that's because you have not had a kid in school in the last 15 years, have you? No, the list is long and expensive.
Wow.
The list is long. I mean, you're like, what? Really? We have to have our own of these? And, it's quite a commitment.
Hmm.
I mean, you see, from elementary school and on, it's quite a commitment. 75% or more kids in some schools qualify for free or reduced school lunch. 75%.
What?
So there's a lot of schools in which the economic hardship is a real thing. So
that's surprising me.
We knew, you buy the colored pencils or the erasers or the scissors or this or that, and a lot of these things are shared, and there are going to be some kids in the classroom that can't afford them. And there's a lot of good programs with churches and other community groups that'll help get school supplies and backpacks for kids that can't afford them. But specifically for things in the classroom that aid the kids in learning.
Mm-hmm.
Donorschoose.org if you want to participate. It's a good article too. Fifth grade teacher Noah Hall is quoted in this. Science and technology, he's interested. Brush College Elementary has raised $10,000 in the last 5 years, funding 31 different projects.
Wow.
That's a cool thing. Cool thing. All right. The other thing I wanted to mention is Blanchette. Blanchette Catholic Schools. Those Catholics, I think, aren't they the Cavaliers? They raised over $2 million. They spent $2 million from alumni of Blanchette, parents, community donors to put in their own turf field.
Wow.
This is a school with 600 people in it. This is not a 2,000 student Sprague or West Salem, 1,800, 2,000 students expanding to 2,400, I guess, into the new lines. But they are going to have their own turf field, and that is a huge undertaking.
Yeah, that's
a lot. Imagine one advantage Blanchette has, of course, it's a Catholic school, it's a private school, and it's a tax-deductible contribution. But they launched a $4.4 million fundraising campaign.
Wow.
4.4 to do not just the field, and which includes track. So soccer will play on the field, football will play on the field. They'll have track, and they're going to have like a state championship in their division as well.
Nice.
And now they get to do it at their own field. Prior to that, their football games were played at Willamette's Field, which is also artificial turf
right
there by Bush Park, which, if you ask me, that's a pretty nice venue to have a high school football game, right?
Yeah, it is.
Anyway,
so did Nike step in on that and help them?
Funny, I don't see Nike's word here anyway. Maybe they don't like Catholics. It's probably an anti-Catholic bias, and we need to start a picket.
No,
yeah,
I don't
the online
think so.
No. Okay, it seems okay. Maybe they don't like Catholics, but 25 years. I'm being facetious, people.
You are.
Do not take that seriously.
Because I know a Catholic school, they did help.
Good.
Just saying, they put in a track for them.
Really?
Yeah, they donated it.
25th anniversary for Blanchette.
That's nice.
Yeah. It's only, Salem's only Catholic secondary school. Yeah, 320 middle and high schools. Really?
I got
that number wrong. Holy cow. So that's a big project. Their state champions, track and field. That's very exciting. It includes lights. It has the grandstand for spectators.
That's pretty big.
All sorts. Yeah, that is a big ticket. I had no idea that fundraiser was going on. Apparently, I'm not on the call list for donations to the Catholic school. I know we've had people on Newsmakers that had something to do with making this happen.
That's true.
We got to take a break, but more community goings on to follow and our erudite thoughts on the matter. Stick with us with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Trying to keep my brain together here. This news segment is for Newsmakers, is brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center. All right.
And welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne talking about all our local issues here for Local Talk Radio. You get a lot of national talk radio here on KYKN and get viewpoints from Rush just prior to the show, a little bit from Bill O'Reilly after. And here we want to focus on our community. And thank you for joining us during every weekday at the noon hour. Of course, on Wednesdays, you're treated to Wednesdays with Denise.
Yeah. Hey, before you get going on here, I just got a message that I wanted to share off of Facebook. A bicycle for a 14-year-old male Kaiser area student who happens to be experiencing housing challenges. He's an active student and wishes to keep at it, but he would appreciate some support in his transportation. For safety reasons, he's not wanting a bus pass. He wants to keep going on his bike. So if you have a bicycle that's in good shape or willing to donate it, please contact me at dave@kykn.com, and we'll forward it on to who needs it.
Very nice. It's one of the kids in our community.
How old? 14.
14 years old.
I remember 14, a bicycle is your freedom.
Yeah.
It really is.
He needs a bike and he needs a helmet, apparently, right?
Yeah. Maybe I think he has a helmet. I think his bicycle may have been stolen. So we want to replace it.
And maybe we can look into, there's a great ministry called The Hub in downtown. We can
somebody said that, and sadly, they're not able to support it.
Yes, but somebody will. Mm-hmm. Somebody will. Dave at KYKN, let's see if we can get this young man a bicycle.
There you go.
All right, thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Sure.
There's so many things in the news here, and so many of them I just want to talk about for so long, I don't know which ones to pick.
Am I going to have any brain cells left today?
I don't know. I love the little emoji. I found one a couple of weeks ago where the head is exploding.
Yes, that's mine today.
And things are just flying out of the head. All right, so let's talk about this because it's the forestry. We haven't talked forestry for a while. So there's a coalition of civil and immigrant right groups. Civil and immigrant rights groups, including the ACLU.
Yeah.
Apparently ACLU has forgotten that the A stands for Americans, but that's another point. And Oregon Innovation Law Lab. Basically what they want to do is they want to prevent ICE officers from arresting individuals near the courthouses.
I'm sorry, what?
So what's happening, what's happening is ICE...
doing their job.
Are doing their job. When they find out that somebody that they suspect is here illegally and they want to detain or what have you, anyway, they're reporting to courts. So then ICE shows up in or around the courthouse and arrests them.
So they're doing their job.
So the civil liberty advocates feel that this is making immigrant and minority communities fearful of the legal system.
Huh.
They're less likely to participate in proceedings, you know, court proceedings. So, again, and here's a quote. This is an attorney,
yeah,
a staff attorney with the ACLU. There's a perception in communities across the state that if they go to court for any reason, they may be arrested by ICE. You know where that perception does not exist? Where the people are legal.
Mm-hmm.
Where the individuals are not illegal. That's where the perception doesn't exist. They don't think they're going to get picked up because
they're
legal citizens.
Right.
So there's a perception in the communities that if they're illegal, then if they've done something illegal, then they might be picked up by someone who's enforcing the law. I'm just like, please.
I just lost 5 more brain cells.
So they're basically trying to, you know, create a rule. And it's a little arcane for me in terms of the court rules. It has to do with the Uniform Trial Court Rules Committee and this and that. We won't get into it. But we have these immigrant rights groups.
They're trying to circumvent the laws. Basically.
Yeah. Well, yeah. They want to prevent
circumventing the law.
Yeah. They want to prevent any enforcement of the law. Anyway.
Which is breaking the law. Pretty much.
Immigrants.
Either is or isn't.
And minority communities. I think minority being thrown in there. Sometimes you just have to challenge the language. People.
Yes.
It doesn't have anything to do with whether they're minority or majority. It has to do with their immigration status.
Yes.
It doesn't matter.
Because there are white people here that are here illegally.
White, yellow, brown, black,
all
pink,
of them.
Blue.
All of them. Anyway. It's either legal or illegal.
It doesn't matter if
they're
a
minority. It doesn't matter what their skin color is.
Minority groups.
Male or female.
Minority groups are no more afraid of ICE than majority groups. But it's just...
I'd be afraid of ICE too if I was here illegal.
Yeah. And if I had gone to Germany and got a job and I overstayed my...
Your visa?
My visa or my...
Allowed time
to be there.
They would
and
be
I didn't
visa.
Have... Didn't have permission to work there, and I got a job, and I'd be a little afraid that somebody found out I was there illegal, and I'd lose my job and get kicked out of Germany.
They would pick you up and send you back to the United States. Say, keep him.
The quote from ICE spokesman Tanya Roman, I don't know if it's Roman or Roman, said the federal law gives ICE officers the authority to make arrests. They don't need a judicial warrant to make an arrest.
Yeah.
She said, we do not comment on pending litigation. However, the idea that a state law can bind the hands of a federal law enforcement agency is wrong. I'm with you there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with you there. We don't talk about immigration policy here on Newsmakers, but this is one of these things very close to home, right here. Someone's going to decide what laws to enforce and not laws to enforce, or make rules such that the laws cannot be enforced. We should know about this.
Mm-hmm.
We should know about this. Anyway, I don't know. I don't get it. And I also don't understand where we were talking yesterday about people blending minimum wage and livable wage and how those are two different topics. But human rights and civil rights are different.
Yes.
And human rights, civil rights, and citizen rights. Right? And this is where I feel the conversation often gets muddled, and it also gets just like
often?
Blended.
All
they
the time.
They like to blend these in the same thing as if, and frankly, that's where I think the Democrats are losing a lot of the independents. If they could just keep doing it, if you want to lose any opportunity to gain the presidency that you want, but you keep trying to muddle, what's a civil right? What do we feel as human beings as humane along the border?
There's that feeling thing again.
Right? Versus you can't muddle those, or what are the rights of U.S. citizens? And should they all be the same? The civil rights, human rights, citizen rights. Anyway, and we're trying to blend those things and give everybody all three without regard to whether or not they qualify. Wow. All right. We got one more big topic. I think I know. Am I going to hurt you?
You already did.
Dave Bourne, you should have seen him. He looked like me when I said that the city council appointee, Vanessa Nordyke, was like, well, we need to talk about this bridge thing in years to come. And I think we could do a better job talking about it. And I'm like, talk about throwing under the bus the hundreds and hundreds of people that worked over it over a decade on
and
it.
And millions of dollars.
Well, you know, I haven't been here yet. So I think you need me to weigh in on it.
I think they need to pay for it.
We'll take a little early break because the next topic is going to require a little time, and we're going to cycle back into forestry. Forestry here.
Are you going to be talking about the old growth thing?
No, we're going to talk about whether or not the state is managing our forests as required by state law.
Oh.
Right? And by contract and agreement that goes back to the 30s and 40s. It's important to our economy, folks. Let's cycle back and talk about it. I'm Brent DeHart here with Dave Warren on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. We're hitting a variety of topics today. If you haven't been with us during the first couple of segments, we're talking about education, how individuals can donate for supplies in classrooms through a web portal, kind of like crowdfunding. And also the new facility at Blanchett Catholic School has their own $2 million athletic facility with a turf field and track and lights and a grandstand, and how exciting that is. And, of course, the appointment of Vanessa Nordyke to Salem City Council Ward 7's vacancy, and she announced right away, but by the way, I'm going to run for the seat, and she will be the incumbent as we go into the primary in May. All right, but now to finish up our hour, I was going to talk a little bit about the a new lawsuit. And this is a lawsuit coming from counties and towns, municipalities that banded together to sue the state of Oregon.
What?
Saying that they have a breach of contract from a decades-old agreement to use the state forested lands for its its best use in terms of the... And the attorney for the counties for the coalition is saying that the state still believes this case is about state statute. It's always been about breach of contract, pure and simple, as opposed to any other topics that try to get muddled in the whole public opinion type of arena. So basically, it goes back to the days where forest lands were granted to the state in exchange, right? So counties turned timberlands over to the Board of Forestry. It was a Forest Acquisition Act. And at that time, the state agreed to replant timberlands.
Okay.
And on the harvest, it's going to share the income with the counties based on the forest, quote, greatest permanent value. And that's the linchpin of the argument, the greatest permanent value. And what is permanent value?
Mm-hmm.
And the lawsuit claims that the timber management for greatest permanent value involves most annual income on a sustainable basis. Most annual income on a sustainable basis. So the lawsuit contends the state is not managing the forests. Of course, we knew that, right?
Right.
They'd rather let it burn down and then
manage it
to then offend anybody that, you know, loves the tree. So this is a breach of contract lawsuit. It goes way back to the Great Depression.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's going to be like a 3-week trial.
How many millions of dollars are we talking?
We're talking about a $1.4 billion. Billion with a B.
Oh, boy.
$1.4 billion breach of contract. 150 counties and other taxing districts are all involved in suing the state.
Yeah, because they're not getting their money that they were promised.
Yeah. The Department of Justice thinks that the state has a right and obligation to amend its management of the state's forests, especially when an environment and wildlife is at stake. Okay. Amend management of the state's forests. That's okay, as long as you get permanent value.
It's called managing it.
Yeah. And does management mean let's not allow salvage logging? Does management mean not thinning? Does management mean let it burn uncontrollably because you didn't manage them?
They just go and close all the forest roads so nobody can get back there, and they don't thin out the forest so it all burns.
So there's 15 counties involved in this lawsuit.
Wow.
And they cover more than 1,000 square miles, almost 1,100 square miles, and they're the Forest Trust counties. So annual share of revenues have gone down during this period of time, $35 million a year.
Ouch.
Yeah. Folks, Tillamook County, our neighbors right here next to Marion County, Tillamook County, Polk County, Marion County, there are timberlands. This is economic development jobs. A lot of quotes in this article from David Yanomoto. He's a Tillamook County Commissioner,
mm-hmm.
right? And he's a Council of Forest Trust Land. He's a chairman of the Council of Forest Trust Land Counties. So there is a Forest Trust Land Counties Council. He's the chair. He's like, this contract was made a lot of years ago, but unfortunately production from the forest lands is not what it could be
right.
at all. Goes back to a conversation or a presentation I saw then State Representative Kevin Cameron talk about. And he was saying, because at the time there was a bill to increase forestry in Tillamook County to 85%, and now County Commissioner Cameron can correct me if I get this wrong, but so I recall 85% of certified sustainability levels. This is not like rape the earth, people. This
no.
is like already certified state, I mean, sustainable.
Right.
Right. Already certified sustainable forestry levels, and they only wanted to do 85% of that number. And it could not get through the legislature.
Ugh.
Could not pass it. No, we can't be doing that because some owl might have to relocate. That's how bad it is. So Tillamook County is still hurting, and here they are stumping for these things. And all right, but it's economic development and it's jobs. So I get that. You know, we're talking about in Marion County, of course. We talk about in Polk County, and what are livable wage jobs? What are great jobs that people can support their families on? And Tillamook County wants it too. Yeah. Average statewide average is about $52,000 a year.
Livable wage.
Tillamook County, $37,000.
Ouch.
They need it.
Yeah.
That's their industry. That not only is it in their industry, but it is a 100% sustainable,
right,
renewable,
mm-hmm,
and profitable industry that brings money into the schools, money into the state coffers. And
how did they not get that?
I don't know.
Wait, maybe they're too young to remember the Tillamook burn.
Purposeful ignorance. I am purposely choosing to remain ignorant because I love trees and I don't want to hear anything that might rock my worldview.
Maybe we should take them on a tour back to, you know, the Tillamook burn.
David Yamamoto, Coda, is saying, we do sustainable forestry today.
Yeah, we do.
It's not like it was a generation or two ago. We're taking care of the environment. And the answer is no. And the answer is no. So Bob Van Dyke is quoted. This is one I want to get to at the end of this article. He's a director of the Wild Salmon Center in Portland. Says that the term greatest permanent value involves more than just timber income. We think greatest timber permanent value is best served by balanced management that provides a range of values for the present and future. Quote, I'm agreeing with this. Those include clean water, fish, and wildlife habitat, timber supply, mm-hmm, revenue, hiking and camping and hunting and off-road vehicle use and carbon storage. Yes, that's what you call managing.
Right.
So that you can have clean water, fish and wildlife habitat. We're Oregonians. We like this stuff. Timber supply is part of the list. Revenue is part of the list. That's what's missing. They've plucked this timber supply and revenue off the list. Hiking and camping and hunting, off-road vehicle use and carbon storage. All are important for Oregonians.
Absolutely.
We have a party. We have philosophy. We have a culture in here that we are only going to do a few of these things and not do what's good for all Oregonians. And it drives me crazy.
You and me both.
Yeah. It's just unimaginable to think the quality of life so many more Oregonians would have if we had more timber product industry.
Right.
In a 100% sustainable and renewable resource fashion. Then we have to grow the trees. We're going to manage the forest. Jobs. We're going to harvest. Jobs. We're going to mill. Jobs, infrastructure.
Income.
Yeah. And then maybe we're not going to import so much from Canada.
Right.
Right. Then we're going to transport it. We're going to build it and everything else. And all that money stays right here or gets exported out of Oregon and brings other people's money in here.
I like other people's money coming in.
Yeah.
Anyway, just saying.
Good luck in the lawsuit. It's supposed to be about 3 weeks there that's going to last. All right, we got to go. This got a lot to cover today, newsmakers. Tomorrow we're going to have the mayor on with Denise. Usually he's with us on Tuesdays, and we shifted him to Wednesday this week to accommodate his schedule. So enjoy Wednesdays with Denise, and we'll be back on Thursday. We've got some guests coming in to introduce you. Thanks for joining us on 1430 KYKN.
This has been Len Fenton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.